You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. This is No BS Nutrition, and you are listening to the dulcet tones of Tariq Youssef, PhD student, neuroscience geek, and close personal friend of
your co-host, registered dietitian Hannah McGee. Thank you so much for being here, everyone. Thanks for being here, Tariq. Thanks for sitting down with me today.
Thank you so much. I said no to a lot of people to be here today, and that's just how special you are to me.
Oh my gosh, I'm honored. I'm truly honored, and we are honored.
RuPaul's Drag Race asked me to be here.
Oh my god, no way.
Yeah, I said no.
You said no?
I'm busy. I know, but like we had a standing appointment, so of course I
can you imagine? value that.
that would be the crossover that no one ever saw coming.
Yeah, No BS Nutrition.
An extra special guest, Tariq Youssef from No BS Nutrition.
Everyone's like, what?
What's cooking? And then, like, my thing is like, I don't know. That's my amazing joke.
I don't know. Oh, no. So what's new? Tell me what's new. How's life?
Well, that's a great question. Thank you so much. You know, it feels like the vaccine's getting closer and closer, which is really cool. The weather is changing. There's lots of sunlight. Trying to meal prep. I started Googling for like one pot recipe or like one pan recipe. You know what I mean? Just like, I don't even want to think. Like, I just want to like put something in the oven or put something on the stovetop and just like get back to work. So that's been good. Other than that, very grateful to be here. What's new with you?
Yeah, you know what? I was just thinking what you said about meal prep. Like, it is honestly so challenging to manage, like, work, sleep, like, social things, exercise, and then trying to like get yourself ahead of the game for the week ahead, it's so hard.
To be alive is impossible.
Seriously,
that is really what
my hat is going off to all of the people who like feel that they have that down pat every single week. You know what? Like, I have my weeks where I'm like, okay, I got this. Like, I plan meals and I've done some prep and like, I'm in a groove. And then I have other weeks where it's just totally like, I've got no clue what was going on. Tonight for dinner, like I had, so it's, I mean, it is a bit of a, it's not a normal week because today is Easter Monday. So we've had a bit of a long weekend. Right. Things were a little bit different with Easter, but like tonight for dinner, I literally like tossed together a random salad with stuff in the fridge. I had a banana chocolate chip muffin.
Ridiculously big salad.
Yeah. A muffin, and I had some peanuts and chocolate chips. And like, that was my dinner. Like, I just had like salad, muffin, little dish of peanuts and chocolate chips.
I've just been putting tzatziki on everything lately. Just like pouring tzatziki on top of anything that I'm eating.
That is the best. When you find like a sauce that you just want to eat on everything. Like, that's
I know.
Yeah, tzatziki's good.
So you know what, actually? On this topic of managing our life and the different things we have to do.
Yes.
I would really love for you to ask me a question.
Okay. I would love to know.
Just think of any question. Any question.
Do you have a BS of the week for me? What? Tell me what BS, nutrition, wellness, health, BS you came across this week.
I actually do. And this week we're going to talk about sleep a little bit.
Nice.
And we're going to talk about sleep supplementation, which we did a little bit before, but this is going to be new.
Okay.
And this is part BS, part information. I don't know. People who are listening, I mean, please give us feedback about this if you want to. But I feel like we do two topics an episode, which is like thinking about it. I'm like, how? Why do we do that to ourselves? But the BS of the week is like basically another whole episode. So it's kind of like a little bit of misinformation and just some regular no BS nutrition chatter.
Yeah.
If that's okay with everybody. So tuck in. Tuck in to bed because you're tired. And some people aren't as tired, so they turn to supplements. And the supplement I'm going to be talking about today is magnesium.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, a general question that comes to mind with supplementation for me is, like, are people really lacking in micronutrients?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe some people are. But I think for certain things, it's not necessarily at epidemic levels that are maybe, like, super clinically urgent, right? So when people are wondering about their nutrition intake, obviously, we'd suggest turning to a registered dietitian, of course. A physician might be able to get a request in for a blood test if that's appropriate for whatever whatever kind of, you know, thing you're looking for, whether you're deficient or not in. For magnesium, it's kind of hard to measure, but it's not impossible to get a rough idea. So there have been studies, of course, on this. And magnesium is super important, as Hannah would know, and as many of the health professionals and allied health professionals who are listening would know. Magnesium supports muscle function, you know, so subsequently it's obviously important for heart rhythm. It's also involved in the transfer of ions across cell membranes, necessary for neuronal communication. I could stop for an hour and we could talk about AMPA receptors and anyway, but I'm not going to get into that, as well as a bunch of other stuff. So there is some correlation there between magnesium's support in muscle function and muscle relaxation slash aiding in sleep.
Right? Yeah.
So that's where the idea for magnesium helping with sleep comes from. So the daily recommended value for magnesium intake by the National Institutes of Health. Oh, I guess I should have gone Canadian.
It's fine.
But I went
it's
American.
Fine.
It's probably the same.
Yeah. Similar.
It's around 300 to 400 milligrams daily. So I was kind of curious about what that really meant. So for people to know, that's about 2 ounces of pumpkin seeds. It's about 2 cups of boiled spinach. You can get 10% of your daily intake from a baked potato, a banana, 2 tablespoons of peanut butter. So I think there's some easy ways to get magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in probably most diets, people are getting some magnesium daily. And I think, therefore, it kind of be safe to suggest that the whole population isn't necessarily magnesium deficient, which is sometimes what these supplement companies try to persuade us of, is that our diets, whatever, have evolved to, like, we just, like, don't consume this stuff anymore and we're all super deficient, so we should be buying these supplements. So there's 10-year-old evidence. There's nothing really recent that I saw at a, like, a huge population level. 10-year-old evidence or more that there's about 50% of Americans who are consuming less than the necessary amount of magnesium.
Right.
So I kind of asked myself, I had this huge conversation with myself, does that mean there's, like, a 50% chance that somebody's deficient? Well, I did some more reading. And, you know, magnesium use by the body, new to me, maybe not new to some people, but maybe new to some people, goes beyond just intake. So our kidneys actually store magnesium that we consume. Some of the magnesium obviously goes throughout our body and supports whatever all these other processes, but magnesium is also stored by the kidneys. The problem is, in certain conditions, this storage is compromised. So some people who are at risk of inadequate magnesium levels in their body are people with Crohn's, celiac, type 2 diabetes, alcoholism, older adults. So there's a common thread there for me with all of these things, is that possibly increased urinary excretion, so getting rid of a lot of ions because people are urinating often, or poor absorption and digestion because of certain whatever, whether it's genetic or trauma related. or injury related poor absorption and digestion, kind of Crohn's, celiac, etc. sort of thing. So yeah, some people can be magnesium deficient, and that's something that obviously would come, like, the registered dietitian who's seeing that person who's an alcoholic, or the physician who's seeing somebody with Crohn's, like, would have that in mind already, because they're obviously, they're probably also deficient in a bunch of other things, right? So on the flip side, though, can somebody take too much magnesium? So there was kind of this idea and a recent case report that iron deficiency was induced by magnesium overdose. So again, like, kind of getting rid of ions possibly. So the thing is, magnesium can actually be used as a laxative. So overuse can end up resulting in, like, poor absorption of some essential micronutrients like iron, for example, leading to anemia possibly. Or it might just result in, like, really uncomfortable bowel movements because someone might be abusing laxatives. I think, I don't know, tell me what you think about this, but I think it's kind of boring to say, try to have a steady sleep schedule, you know, limit your screen time before bed. So I think what I'll add to that is just, like, try your best to people. Like, I've been having some trouble with my sleep lately. I'll tell you what I've been doing. Not that it's clinical help at all, but, you know, if people need help with their sleep, obviously they could benefit from talking to somebody like a therapist or a doctor. Something I've been trying to do, which is easier said than done, definitely, from my experience anyway, is I'm really trying to wake up at the same time. So aside from just trying to go to bed at the same time, I'm trying to, even if it's maybe the not my best sleep that I've ever had, trying not to sleep in, which, yes, makes me a little bit more lethargic during the day sometimes, but I'm finding it's helping me be more sleepy at night, kind of like helping get me into a rhythm again. So that's something I've been trying to do. Something I also saw was like one of a million suggestions that people could try. But yeah, sleep can be really tough, and there's a lot of, like, options out there for things that people can buy to help with their sleep. I think, I don't know, do whatever makes you happy and, like, whatever helps you. Try not to spend a lot of money and talk to somebody if it's a really big problem. That's my summary.
Yeah. So here we are, like, we're addressing claims that magnesium supplements help you sleep. This is correct, right? I've heard that as well. And I've seen, like, wellness influencers or things like that show their, like, bedtime routine, and it, like, involves a magnesium supplement. But it's not something that I had actually really looked into. So I'm glad that you talked about it. And,
the funny thing about that also is that I don't think magnesium intake is necessarily tied to like a time of day for taking it.
Interesting. Okay.
Like, to, like, promote sleep or, like, promote healthier sleep. So, like, whatever, like, you can take it at bedtime if you want, but, like, that doesn't really mean anything. But, like, beyond that, my main message is kind of, like, you might not be deficient in magnesium. Like, that might not be your problem, right? Like, the problem might be just, like, poor sleep hygiene.
Yeah.
And poor sleep behavior.
Right. So what you're saying is that, so if you are magnesium, what's the word I'm looking for?
Deficient?
Not deficient.
Oh, not deficient.
There's magnesium, a word for that, like magnesium.
Magnesium, heck yeah.
There's a term, like, in the clinical world for that. Magnesium, like, normal, not normal, but, like, you have normal levels of magnesium. So if you have normal levels of magnesium, it won't, like, taking more of it wouldn't help you sleep, is what we're saying?
I don't think it's that cut and dry, honestly. Right now, it's just, like, very corollary. It's like, there is an idea that this may be helping in like a roundabout way, possibly. Like, there's a possibility that it might be helping, but I don't think it's, like, so cut and dry.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
And there's, like, a million other things that you could do without buying anything.
It's so true. And that is something that even, like, when we talked about, we talked about blue light blocking glasses and how, you know, there's so many.
Another study just came out that they don't do anything.
They don't work, really. Or for, for sleep anyways. That's so interesting. And there's so many, there is so many other things that maybe you could look at before you look into supplementing or blue light blocking glasses or like spending money, right? There's so many other things about around your sleep hygiene or even, I mean, one thing for me that is very noticeable is exercise. And because exercise tires your body out. Like it makes your body like need rest because you've worked your muscles, you've worked your body. And so I find on days or on weeks where I've, you know, maintained my exercise routine or, you know, exercised regularly, more than weeks where maybe I take, you know, I have a lot of work going on and I don't find enough time to exercise, I sleep better because my body is like craving that rest. So that's just like, you know, that's another reason to try to find some more movement in your day if you can, is, a, you know, possibly better sleep as well.
I think sleep is like one of those, it's kind of like, or just for me anyway, the way that I think about it, trouble with sleep is kind of like, overeating emotionally, because there's actually like an underlying cause. And if we try to like rather than like fixing the underlying cause, we try to fix the symptom, you know what I mean? But that's not going to change anything about why we have poor sleep. So like someone's poor sleep is driven by anxiety, for example, adding melatonin to the mix, like maybe in the short term is going to help a little bit, but you haven't actually tackled that anxiety. Right. Like that's still there.
Yeah.
You know what I
absolutely.
Mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. You have to really kind of get to that root issue of why you're not sleeping, which can be hard.
Totally.
But yeah, I would say take a look at maybe your sleep. That's always the first thing I go to, is take a look at your sleep regimen. Like, you know, winding, do you wind down before bed or do you like go from watching some stressful TV show to immediately trying to sleep? Or do you go from working to immediately trying to sleep? Yeah. You know, things like that.
I don't know how people do that. I can't watch anything serious. I can't do it.
No, I can't. If I watch something that's like my slightly scary or sad or whatever, I won't sleep well. It has to be like purely like lighthearted comedy or something like.
I just watch Hallmark movies. That's all I watch.
Oh, that's funny. This is, I guess we should say that we haven't really said yet, but this is episode 20.
I feel like we've been hiding a secret from our kids.
Yeah, we have. We've been keeping something from you. So this is season 3, episode 20 that you are currently listening to. And this is going to be the last episode of this season. So season 3 is...
I'm crying, but I'm also tired, but I'm crying.
I feel you. I feel you. It's sad, but we're just like, we're ready for a little break.
We want to come back stronger than ever.
Yeah, we always want to come back stronger than ever. And I think, our season 2 was 20 episodes. They always go by so fast. Season 3 now, 20 episodes. So we're going to take a little break in between.
Amazing guests this season too.
Yeah, we had some good guests. Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Okay, I'm obsessed with us.
And hopefully we'll come back season 4 in a little while, summer season, maybe, you know.
Maybe we should go on Oprah's podcast. We can kind of do that collaboration. Help her out, you know what I mean? Like bring our fan base over there.
Yeah, she needs us. She really needs us.
Yeah.
Just wanted to let you guys know that while you're listening, that this will be the last episode of this season, and then we'll take a little break and then we will come back. And also, if you haven't, take a listen back to all of our previous episodes. Make sure you're caught up while we're gone, taking a little break. Just catch yourself up on what you may have missed in season 1 and 2, so that you know, there's plenty of episodes that you can
This is so cliche to say, but listen back and see how amazing, like much more amazing we got at editing and audio.
Yeah, I know. It was bad at first. It was bad. And I'm sure we could still improve.
Well, we were in a professional recording studio.
We were, but our editing was questionable.
It wasn't as good.
And even, like, I don't know, like, just the way we talked into the microphones and things like that, it was...
We were We were learning.
Yeah, we were learning. We've really had to adapt and learn a lot over these last few seasons of this podcast.
I feel like I have like a weird new set of skills that I hope I can continue using because I've been like working hard at them.
Yeah, you know, no, for sure. It's actually really neat to have all these kind of production and editing skills that we didn't have before. But okay, now that we've mentioned that.
Training sessions? Okay, sorry. Yeah,
let's should do it. Should we train people?
We could be like podcast, like we can teach you how to start a podcast.
We should put ourselves up on Fiverr as as editors.
Yeah, you're right. anyway. Yes, Hannah. Speaking of, wait, what were you, what was your,
I was just going to say, now we should get into the main topic of the episode because, you know, I just wanted to let, I didn't want to wait till the end and hide our secret till the end. Right. So jumping back now into the nutrition content of the episode, we are going to talk today about a topic that personally I get asked all the time. Like,
it's very now.
It's very now. And it's like,
it's our generation is obsessed with
this. Yes. And I find that, yeah, everyone wants to know about this. Everyone, like, it's probably like the number one question I get as a dietitian.
It used to be like more niche, right? Like, it used to be kind of like a pro thing. But now it's like the every person wants like to get into
an everyday thing, which is like, whatever marketing, like whatever company first started marketing it that way,
good
for you because you're probably swimming in cash. Yeah. But we're going to talk about protein powders and we're going to talk about specifically how to choose a protein powder or what to look at when you're trying to decide what protein powder to buy or to use. And it, I mean, if you really need to take a protein supplement or protein powder at all. So I broke it down a couple different ways. I broke it down into first, I separated like animal and plant-based protein powders and kind of talked about, you know, what you can look for in an animal or like.
Sorry, I don't know why I thought you were going to say like animal or human, like for your pet's protein powder or like for you.
Honestly, that if that was a thing.
I know. Now that there's like pet CBD oil, you never know. I would there might not be pet surprised. Like get your cat jacked this summer for the beach.
Oh, the poor cats. The poor kittens.
Pitbull beach body.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I wouldn't put it past all the companies out there.
Actually, really. Let's trade verbal trademark right now. No one can steal
it.
We are
starting that company.
We get rich. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. I'm going to separate into animal protein and plant protein. And then I have some tips for, like, in general, choosing a protein powder as well.
I love that. I kind of, how I chose to do it is actually really complementary to what you're doing.
Nice.
I chose to go about it as like, if you're gonna, how to use protein powder.
I love it. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
So I'd love to hear what you've got.
Okay. So starting with, we'll start with animal base or like, I mean, dairy or like
protein milk. From animals.
Yeah. Well, most of like protein powder from animals is typically dairy based, right? Like whey or casein comes from, like, it's basically a byproduct of milk or cheese production. So there are two main types of dairy protein powders that are most popular on the market. So there's your whey protein and there's your casein protein. So I'll just break down a little bit what they are. So the whey protein is basically comes from, or the, like, not even the protein powder, but the whey. So whey is a liquid.
Curds and whey.
Yes, exactly. So whey is like the liquid.
Okay, poutine vibe.
Cheese curds. The liquid byproduct that is gets separated from the curds in the cheese making process. So you're making cheese that, you know, the milk gets separated into the whey and into the curds. So you, to make whey protein powder, you would take that liquid whey and filter it first to remove some of the, like, the carbohydrates, like lactose and some of the fat. And then you would dry it into a powder. And that's how you get whey protein powder. And then casein protein is also a byproduct of cheese production, but it comes from the curds. So again, like I said, you know, when you're making cheese, the milk gets separated into the whey and the curds. So then the casein protein comes from those curds that can also get dried into powder form. So casein protein is actually also the main, or like the most concentrated protein in milk. I think milk is about 80% casein protein, you know, the protein in milk. Yeah. So when it comes to a protein powder, if you're deciding between whey and casein, so let's break this down. Usually whey protein is your best bet. So whey.
Way better.
It's way better. Yes.
That's how you can remember everybody.
Yeah. Love it. So whey protein is like the gold standard usually for, you know, for protein powder, because it is more quickly digested and absorbed by the body. So it, you know, most people want to use a protein powder as like a post-workout recovery supplement, right? They want to get their protein in easily or quickly after a workout. And so a lot of people rely on protein powder. So that's usually why whey is kind of the gold standard, because it'll get digested and absorbed quicker. Compared to casein protein, which provides a little bit of like a slower release of the amino acids into the bloodstream. So I know some like bodybuilders or professional athletes, if they take both whey and casein, casein like at nighttime before bed, because it has that slow release.
There's a whole community of people on the web who are literally like at home experts on this, like just like talking on forums.
I know.
Whatever, how many minutes a day like they spend doing whatever, taking this versus that.
I know. It's it's wild. Okay. So let's just back up here. So between whey and casein, generally whey is the one that most of us want to go with. It's easier and more quickly digested and absorbed by the body. But then now, you know, it just can't be that simple. There are also different varieties of whey protein. So on the market, there is your whey isolate protein and your whey concentrate protein.
Oh.
So you've got two different options. And some people might be wondering, how do I choose between a whey isolate and a whey concentrate? So I'll say that, you know, both whey isolate and whey concentrate protein powders, they contain the same amino acids. You know, they're complete proteins. They've got all 20 amino acids. But whey isolate tends to, it tends to be lower in things like carbohydrates, tends to be lower in fat. When I say lower in carbohydrates, some of that carbohydrate would be lactose. So it's lower in lactose as well. So for some people who may have lactose intolerance, you know, that might be a better option. Although the amount of lactose in a whey concentrate protein still, you know, isn't that much. So you may also tolerate that too. So a whey isolate protein basically gets further processed, you know, in that filtering and drying of the whey protein. A whey isolate protein would be like more filtered. So they're filtering out more carbohydrates, more lactose, more fat, so that it's, you know, basically isolated whey protein. So a whey isolate has to be at least 90% of that protein powder is whey protein.
Can I ask a question, Hannah?
Yes.
Am I wrong in thinking that the inclusion of fats and sugars, like carbohydrates sometimes, is for the benefit of maintaining the protein like as is, so like it doesn't degrade as much, and like simultaneously maybe helping it dissolve better in solute, like when you bring it up with water or whatever?
That's interesting. I didn't read that. I didn't see anything about that, but that's a very good question. Unfortunately, I don't have the answer for you.
Okay. We'll cut that out. Just kidding.
I mean, I'm okay with people knowing I don't have all the answers. Okay. So then whey concentrate, like I was saying, so whey isolate has to be 90% protein, mm-hmm. at least. And then a whey concentrate, because it's not as filtered or it's not as processed or isolated, a whey concentrate protein could be anywhere from 30 to 89% whey protein. And okay. the rest would be carbohydrates, like lactose or something like fat, those things that yeah. haven't been filtered out. So when you're choosing between those two, it really, I mean, there, from what I've read, there may be like a slight benefit in the absorption of a whey isolate, because obviously, you know, it's more concentrated protein. But because it's so much more concentrated, it also goes up quite yeah. a bit in price. So it would be quite a bit pricier. And again, you're still getting the same amino acids in a concentrate. You'd just be getting other things too. So a whey isolate protein is a little bit higher in protein content per serving. You know, mm-hmm. it's not drastic, but it would be a little bit higher protein content. It'd be lower in fat. It would be lower in carbohydrates, and it would be more expensive. And then a whey concentrate mm-hmm. would be, you know, a little bit lower in protein, higher in fat, yeah. higher in carbs, and a little more affordable. So it's really kind of, that's what you have to weigh.
Because it's less processed.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if it kind of like, I wonder too if having the fat in with the whey concentrate is kind of beneficial, because the fat like kind of helps carry like the protein through the digestive system almost. Whereas the whey isolate, like, you're not going to absorb all of it. Like, there's no way you're going to absorb, like, every single, like, whatever milligram of protein that's, like, in whatever portion you're taking, right? Some of it is going to be, whatever, broken down, before it gets there to the digestive system, or some of it's just going to, like, pass through, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if in the end, like, it ends up evening out, like, you end up kind of getting the same benefit from each of them. I don't know.
Yeah,
don't know.
So
someone out there, reach out.
One of the blog posts that I was reading by a dietitian to prepare for this episode was by, I've probably mentioned her before, but she's a really, really knowledgeable sports dietitian. And her name's Angie Ashy, and her business is called Elite Sports Nutrition.
Shout out.
And her, yeah, so in her post, she didn't have like a reference or a source mentioned, but she did say like there may be a slight benefit from whey isolate okay. compared to whey
okay,
concentrate.
Because there's just, it's so much more.
Yeah. But yeah. It didn't seem like it was anything drastic or,
right.
Or anything like that. And it's, right. it's kind of like both are good.
And you're paying more. So
yeah.
It's really like
and it's like, depending on your goals, like it. If you're, you know, a professional athlete or a bodybuilder or something like that, sure. Maybe mm-hmm. you want to go with the whey isolate. If you've got very specific muscle gain goals or things like that,
right,
you know,
right.
Whereas if it's just more of like an everyday use thing, maybe you don't, you know, you don't have to focus so much on gaining this much muscle or what That's have really you that maybe you'd go with the more affordable whey concentrate just because you're looking for something to, you know, supplement in your diet. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I would look at that. Now, for plant-based protein.
PBB. No, plant-based.
Wait.
PBP.
Plant-based beverages.
Plant-based beverage.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
PBB. Plant-based protein. PBP.
Yeah.
For plant-based proteins, there was a couple of things that I wanted to mention. So one of the big things around plant-based proteins that has been a little bit of a question or misconception is I think initially it was thought that if you're going to purchase a plant-based protein powder, that it should be made up of a variety of different plant-based protein sources. So in the tub, there should be a mixture of things, you know, variety of like pea protein, soy protein, maybe hemp protein or rice protein. And this is because people thought that, you know, the plant-based protein had to be a complete protein, right? It had to contain all 20
of the essential
amino acids.
Oh, okay.
There are 9 essential amino acids, but a complete protein has all 20 amino acids. And I just lost my train of thought there for a sec. But now we know more and more, and that it's, you know, it's not absolutely necessary in a sitting to get all of the 20 amino acids, so long as you're eating a variety of different proteins or plant-based proteins throughout the day.
You'll get it.
You'll get the 20 amino acids as long as you're eating a variety throughout the day. So it really, you know, you don't have to have a protein powder in your protein shake that has a variety of different proteins.
Right.
That said,
it's not a life or death situation to not have
exactly. a complete protein. Exactly. That said, if you do, like, if for some reason, again, you are looking for a plant-based protein powder that is most similar to a whey protein, then you probably would want one that has a variety of different protein sources, because it would have a more similar amino acid profile as a whey protein.
Sure.
But again, not necessary. So that's what I wanted to say about plant-based proteins. Now I'll say what we can kind of look for in all protein powders, whether it's whey protein, whether it's plant-based protein. There's a couple things that you can look at. So the first one is just, you know, try to... I don't want anyone to, like, be obsessive about this or to fear certain ingredients, but one thing that you can kind of look out for is, like, if the protein powder has, like, a long list of flavorings and added sugars and, you know, or artificial flavors or things like that, maybe you can find another one that doesn't have such a long list of likely unnecessary things. Now... Because I know that
it's that conversation about ultra processed food.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and there are protein powders out there that don't have long lists of flavorings and sugars and, you know, sweeteners, things like that. So you can find it. It's just a matter of looking. And I say that, again, not to demonize added sugar or any other ingredients. But you have to think about, this is my train of thought anyways, you have to think about the purpose for using the protein powder. It's not like for dessert, you know, it's if you're using protein powder regularly, it's usually to either replace, like, a protein source in your diet. You know, you stopped eating, I don't know, some protein source, and you're trying to get your protein intake back up. So you're using protein powder, or you're trying to supplement because you already don't eat enough. And I would rather eat a quality, like, whole food protein source if you can. So if you're going to add a protein powder, you want it to be kind of as close to, like, as minimally processed as possible, if that makes sense, right?
So that it's almost like part of what you're saying to me sounds like you don't want to... you know, make an adjustment in your diet to allow for more protein, but also then, like, tip the scales even, like, more than you wanted to because of all of these additives that are in a product that are changing your diet in a way that you didn't even want to in the first place.
Right.
Like, when you can avoid that.
Right. And most people are looking for protein powder as, like, a health food, right? They're considering protein powder something... I mean, a lot of people think, oh, I want to get healthy, or I want to change my diet, I'm going to add a protein powder in. Or I've heard protein is part of a healthy diet, I'm going to add protein powder in. And maybe some people don't realize that when they buy a protein powder, some of them contain, like, a bunch of unnecessary things, right?
Things that we'd rather keep in moderation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I would say, if this is something that you take, like, once a week or once a month, you know, it's not... protein powder is not something you eat regularly, maybe you don't need to consider this so much. But if it's something you're taking every day or multiple times a day, then you'll probably want to be mindful of added sugars or things like that, right?
Right.
So again, from the awesome blog post, which I'll link about protein powders from Angie at Elite Nutrition, she had kind of a list of some things that you can skip if you see them on the protein powder ingredients list, you can probably find a protein powder out there that doesn't have these things. So things like mono and diglycerides, artificial flavors, crystalline fructose, corn syrup, artificial flavors, artificial sweeteners like Splenda or aspartame, things like that. You know, you can find quality protein powders out there that don't have those things. So, you know, might as well try to look for them. If that makes sense. Does that?
Totally. Yeah. That totally makes sense. Because I'd rather have my dessert be something that I actually enjoy and
and
know that like this is when I'm eating, like this is when I'm eating the thing that I want to eat as a treat, rather than like including it in my breakfast maybe where I might not want.
Exactly. Okay, so one more thing that we can look at when we're choosing a protein powder is if it's been like third party tested or not. Because as we know, as we've talked about, supplements aren't regulated.
No.
They're not regulated by the FDA or any sort of body like that. And that includes protein supplements or protein powders.
And Health Canada doesn't regulate anything.
No. Yeah. Health Canada, FDA, all of those things don't regulate. So what is on the label of your protein powder could be inaccurate. We don't know. It's not to say that what's in it is going to be harmful to you. Like, it's not like you should fear anything that's not been, because
you might not get a shrimp tail in your, cereal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if they're saying, you know, 30 grams of protein per scoop and only 1 gram of sugar, that could be totally wrong. It could possibly, you know, there could be 6 grams of sugar and only 21 grams of protein if it's not actually confirmed by third-party testing. So it can be helpful to look for that. Again, so what that means basically is that the company has paid an organization to test the product and ensure that it actually does contain what it says it does on the label.
Right.
So that's what third-party testing is. And usually a product will either be labeled as, like, third-party testing. There'll be a stamp on it that says, like, tested by, I don't know, there's various different organizations that can do it. Or on their website, it will say that it's been tested. So, and this is, you know, it's not as relevant to just kind of like the general public, because there are lots of protein powders out there that I know people love that aren't tested, and they seem to be fine. But for one specific population, any sort of like either professional or even like a collegiate athletes, it's important that you are taking a protein powder that is like, that's been tested and that's even like certified for sport. Because there could be like performance enhancing, you know, products in your protein supplement that are banned by, you know, whatever sport, I don't know, regulatory bodies.
It's not
bodies
a bad thing
are.
To know what's in your food.
Totally. And if you're an athlete and you're taking a product with banned substances in it and then you get drug tested, like you could get, you know, disqualified or whatever, right? So,
I mean, that's the whole thing about nutrition literacy, right? It's like, even though it sounds like it's a bit of a focus on food rather than maybe what people might consider to be intuitive, it actually, like, it ends up making you a better intuitive eater in the long run to have this kind of nutrition knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's just another one to consider. Again, it's not something that, is absolutely necessary. I mean, people take supplements, whether it's nutrition, like, vitamin and mineral supplements.
You might say,
or
it's not a Sophie's Choice, for example.
What do you mean? Like,
it's not a Sophie's Choice.
It's not do or die.
Yeah. To look for, you know, sports certified versus not.
Yeah, it's just an option. You know, if you want to go that length to make sure that your protein contains exactly what it says on the label without any sort of variance or anything like that, then that's something you can look for as well, though it's not absolutely necessary for the general population who's just taking protein powder for
willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly. Exactly. Okay, wait. I'm sorry. I do have one last thing.
No, don't apologize.
No, one last thing, and it's not. It's very short. Choose a protein powder that you like.
Oh, I love everyone's crying. Everyone's hugging each other.
Because, like, there are disgusting ones out there, and some people try to choke them down just because they've heard that they're, like, the healthiest protein on the planet. But you know what? If you do like a protein that has, I don't know, sucralose in it, and it's the only it's the only one that you like, don't not eat it. But, you know, these are just some things that can help guide you when you're making a decision. There's no, like, hard and fast rules. This is just to be helpful.
I love that. That was amazing. That was a great rundown of all of that stuff. I feel like anyone who is blending raw chicken breasts doesn't listen to our podcast.
No, I don't think so.
So I think people who are listening, I totally understand, like, yeah, like, these are options to consider and not, you know, hard and fast rules necessarily.
Yeah.
I love that. Was amazing. I didn't know a bunch of that stuff. Oh, that was really cool.
Good. Well, now I'm love to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely. And my whole thing, again, is all about using protein powder in tandem with exercise and how to do it maybe for whatever outcome people are looking for. So, Hannah, I kind of have a few questions for you, if you don't mind, about movement.
Okay.
I'm kind of wondering, are you a leg day, arm day gal? Or, like, what's your whole story with your movement in the way that, you know, do you target certain areas, or are you just kind of like a go with the flow person? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, So I don't take it as seriously as, like, the fitness influencers out there that have their, like, intense workout splits, they call it, that, you know, they've got two leg days a week, and on this day is back day, and this day is, I don't do that. But I do, I mean, so I work out from home right now. I haven't gone to the gym in over a year. And I don't, like, I do strength training, but I wouldn't say that I lift weights per se, in the sense that, like, I use the machines at the gym. You know what I mean? Like, I usually do, like, group fitness classes that involve weights and, like, strength training and things like that. Or I do, I have a fitness app that I love that has, like, workout videos where you would incorporate, like, you know, weights with that. So usually when I'm planning out my kind of movement for the week, I do kind of, like, I'll say, okay, on this day I'm going to do, like, I don't know, two, like, leg day workout videos from the app. Or I'll do, or I'll go for a run this day, and then I'll come home and do, like, the 10-minute ab routine, I don't know, on the app. Or, you know, so I do kind of focus, like, this day I'll do legs, this day I'll, but it's not like I'm not training as intensely as, you know, some people at the
gym. You're not targeting, like, specific muscle groups, or example, like, so specific.
No, I'm not, like, triceps today. Day-to-day. It's like upper body. I'll do upper body workout videos today.
But you might also, like, run too.
Yes.
That day,
yeah. Depending on
upper body.
Yeah. Depending on how long the workout video was or how intense it was, et cetera. Yeah.
Interesting. So I would call you then somebody who is a concurrent trainer.
Okay.
Okay. Rather than somebody who does isolated exercises.
Yeah,
that are maybe targeting different groups. So this was all new to me, and I'm really excited to share this because it was interesting for me to learn. So I'm even more mixed up. Like, I just do whatever I want to that day. I, like, don't know what I did yesterday. Yeah, it's just like, if I'm liking something, I usually just, like, do it for a while. And you know what I mean? If, like, I pick up what's like a circuit, like, that I really, really love, I'm, like, crying that there's a pandemic. Anyway, I also haven't been in the gym in over a year, working out from home.
Yeah.
So protein powder is really popularly used, as you mentioned, in synergy with exercise, right? Like, people are taking, like, post-workout protein, you know, bulk up, gains, etc. Those are all my Gen Z words about exercise. Because they want to quickly increase muscle mass.
Yeah.
So that would subsequently increase what someone might call their strength. But in the literature, this is called adaptation to exercise. So adapting to exercise is basically just means that someone can do the same thing with less effort over time. So for example, you know, running 5K, but it gets easier. You might go faster after a few weeks of running 5K, or lifting 100 kilograms might get easier. You might be able to do more reps than you did the first time that you did that. Yeah. So over time, you build muscle. You also increase your vasculature, increase your capillary density. Basically just means that you're bringing more oxygenated blood faster to certain muscles. So this is what increases your capacity, providing more energy, oxygen to those muscle areas. It also increases your endurance during exercise. So, but the thing that I ran into, which I thought might be interesting to share with everybody, is does protein powder kind of differentially support different kinds of exercises? Right. So whey protein isolate or concentrate combined with this is actually the title of a paper that I'm going to talk about. So this is the title: whey protein isolate or concentrate combined with concurrent training does not augment performance, cardiorespiratory fitness, or strength adaptations. So this was from 2020 by Forbes and Bell. Obviously will be linked in the description. So there is evidence that protein supplements definitely support strength training, mm-hmm. right? So like muscle building, mm-hmm. like with like weights, etc. There's also evidence that protein supplements support endurance training, which is more like cardio, running sort of thing, like rowing, these kinds of things that are like you're doing a lot of it for a long time. You're not necessarily working out to exhaustion. You know what I mean? It's not like lifting the heaviest thing I can lift and then I would literally need to stop for 10 minutes. So there is definitely like evidence for both of those things. Protein powder, protein supplements do support, you know, adaptation to those kinds of exercises. So strength training, again, is kind of like, so it can be weights, can be resistance training, for example, whether it's your, so it doesn't necessarily have to be lifting. So it can be like push-ups, for example, using your own weight or using external resistance. That would be like free weights. Endurance training, you know, can beyond just, you know, running or whatever, can also be dancing, biking, walking. So if people are doing both of those things together, so let's say like you go do a Zumba class and then you go also lift some weights, you are doing concurrent training. So you're doing two kinds of exercises, strength and endurance, within the same relative time. So this paper was looking to see if protein powder helps with concurrent training adaptation. So strength and endurance, people who are doing both workouts, mm-hmm. like us. So it was originally thought that if people did concurrent training, rather than focusing on separate goals like upper body, lower body, then they would be able to reach their desired fitness goals faster. Mm-hmm. So like for pro athletes and stuff, there was this huge movement in athletics, like several, maybe like a few decades ago, to move toward concurrent training. So it got more popular. And there's some evidence that there can be synergy with concurrent training. Like maybe it is faster to develop certain muscle groups or whatever faster because of concurrent training. But it's still kind of up in the air because there's also evidence that separate training is better.
Right.
So anyway, I was really curious to see what this paper had to say. So this study had 31 participants, low number, but what can you do? Just sharing what happened. And there was a supplementation with a placebo, or they use two different kinds of whey protein. Now everybody knows what whey protein is. Thank you to Hannah McGee, RD. So exercise testing was done a few times. It was done before and after 6 weeks of concurrent training. So they took blood samples at rest, 5 minutes and 60 minutes after a simulated rowing challenge, which I guess would be like there's external resistance, but there's also cardio involved because you're like you're moving your body or whatever. Mm-hmm. So all groups, so the placebo, the different kinds of whey protein, all groups experienced improvements in their cardiovascular and their strength fitness. So the endurance and the strength. And they also did a bunch of like hormonal and immune testing from their blood. and there were similar results for both groups. So there was no difference in performance or fitness level, or immune or hormonal signaling with or without protein supplementation after 6 weeks of concurrent training. So kind of asked myself, like, why might this be the case? So one thing we've talked about before, obviously, is you can only consume so much protein in a sitting. So it's about 25 grams. So if people who were taking the placebo were consuming enough protein at mealtimes, and maybe those mealtimes were appropriately spaced out through their day to, relative to the exercise, then maybe they just, like, you just can't absorb more than what your body can take, even if you're taking that protein powder. So maybe technically some of these people were at threshold for protein consumption already. And there's actually controversial evidence, like I said, about whether or not concurrent training results in better fitness enhancements than strength training and endurance training separately. So maybe there really is no reason to expect a huge difference. So I guess the take-home message here is, if you're somebody who enjoys concurrent training and you're consuming a balanced diet with a good amount of protein, then maybe supplementing with a protein powder is kind of like a moot thing. Like, maybe you don't really need to do it, because there's no evidence right now to suggest that it pushes you to a higher fitness level faster than otherwise if you weren't taking the protein powder. And I think that probably has to do with whether or not you have a pretty balanced diet with a good amount of protein in it. But yeah, I guess for concurrent training, it doesn't seem to make a huge difference in this study.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that makes sense. Makes sense to me anyways, because, you know, the last thing I was going to say in this episode is that, you know, for most of us, a protein powder isn't really necessary. Taking a protein right. supplement isn't something that we need to do, because most of us do get adequate protein in our diet through eating food. And in reality, mm-hmm. the best source of protein that you can consume is, like, from whole food sources. So,
yeah.
you know, whether that is meat or poultry or seafood or eggs, or whether that is tofu or tempeh.
Big Tempeh is never going to sponsor us.
Other, like, you know, milk or soy milk, things like that. Like, when you consume those things, you're getting high quality protein, but you're also getting other nutrients, right? You're getting other things yeah. that are good for us when you eat those things that you need. So ultimately, like, you know, my recommendation is always going to be food first. You know, right. whether you're just a general, whether you're a NARP.
What?
No, I'm just kidding. Like,
what does that
mean? A NARP is a non-athletic regular person.
Oh my God, me!
Or you're like a professional athlete.
That's so funny. I'm changing all of my social media handles.
NARP.
NARP.
Professional NARP. But yeah, so whether you are just, like, you know, an individual who, you know, works out 3 to 5 days a week or whatever, or you're an athlete, my recommendation is still going to be that, like, you should aim to get, you know, meet your protein needs with food. And then if you can't,
right,
then that's when a protein powder would come in. You know, you don't necessarily need to be adding protein powder to everything, or eating, you know, adding protein to your baked goods and to your, you know, things yeah. like that. But actually another thing is that, aside from the muscle building, muscle recovery, muscle protein synthesis, aside from that, protein also helps us feel full and satisfied, right? So if that's something that is a goal of yours, and you want to add protein powder to a smoothie for that reason, you know, it's not necessarily a muscle building thing, then it could come yeah. into play then as well. But for most of us, again, you can meet your protein needs through a variety of different foods, and a lot of us don't need to immediately consume 25 grams of protein after our like 20 minute toned arms workout. Do you know what I mean? I'm talking to myself. No,
I know you're talking. You're calling me out.
No, I'm calling myself out too.
No, I know, yeah. I know. You're talking about yourself, but it's like I'm in that family. Yeah. Like, we're part of a community.
Yeah, exactly. You know, protein powder was originally like designed for like bodybuilders and professional athletes who are doing rigorous,
the Michael Phelps's of the world,
rigorous strength training and or endurance training. And need to recover quickly in order to recover and build muscle and you know,
can't
perform.
Like, can't dare to lose any muscle mass right. at all.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. exactly. Yeah, that was a really interesting conversation. I hope everyone listening, I hope you learned something. I enjoyed it.
Thanks so much, everyone. You can go to bodybuilding.com and use code NOBS to get a free year, actually. No, just kidding, everyone.
Just joking. Yeah. Okay, actually, okay. I might cut this out. But one thing I was going to say is that, yeah, there's that. So that thing you said about like I think you actually said we can only consume 25 grams of protein in a sitting.
But oh, you absorb. Meant
absorb. Yeah. But that
you're not allowed to eat anymore. Yeah, put that fork down. No more protein powder for you.
That it's so confusing to me, and I'm gonna cut this out. But I think that like there's such a debate around that. I don't know if you ran into that, but some people say okay. like some stuff that I've read says that you can't, like for muscle synthesis, you can only absorb 25 to 35 grams of protein in a sitting.
Okay.
But then you may still use that protein for other, you know, things that your body needs.
That actually
needs.
Makes complete sense.
Yeah. Then as well, our bodies don't really store protein. So anything in excess after that, like after we've used it for other things too, would be excreted. Maybe I will leave this in. But for, in my understanding, I think that's what that...
I think we've actually said that before, too. That it is about, like, the muscle building.
Yeah, for muscle protein synthesis, there is kind of, like, a limit for, like, absorption of protein and how it gets used.
The other really important thing... The other really important thing we've said about protein before is that some evolutionary biologists think that eating protein for breakfast with low carbohydrates makes you a nicer person. True. Which we're not going to necessarily use as a recommendation.
No, but I can't give up carbs breakfast.
You can find a paper about anything. No.
Maybe that's why I'm a whole horrible person. I'm just kidding.
Well, speaking of... breakfast and carbs and sweet things and you know things like that, I would love to ask you after this meaty conversation, what's been tasty for you this week?
Thank you so much for asking. I honestly almost forgot about our tasties, and I was going to jump right into a conclusion. Okay. So I'm glad you asked. But what's been tasty for me this week is shakshuka.
Oh my gosh. Oh my. Throwback for me. Have you been making it?
Yeah. Yum. I made it like, I've made it, you know, in the past quite a bit, but I hadn't made it in such a long time. And it's, I forget how easy it is.
And it's so good.
So good.
There is nothing, Mediterranean / Middle Eastern food is literally... I think the first purpose is enjoyment. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, it is literally made to make you feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so simple, like, but so good.
Totally.
Like, so simple.
It's all about... Yeah, it's definitely, like, maybe, like, technically so simple. It's all about, like, ingredients.
It is. And,
like,
ingredient quality.
Using the ingredients, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that... I think that, like... There's something so special about that.
So
that's so nice.
We had it for dinner on. I also, what I love about shakshuka is that you can eat it for like any meal of the day. Like, it's totally. Got eggs in it, yeah, so you can have it for breakfast, you can have it for lunch, you can have it for brunch, you can have it for dinner. So we had it for dinner the other night with some nice, like, toasted, crusty bread that we enjoyed with it. Oh, it was so good. And then we had leftovers for lunch the next day, so it was perfect.
When I think of a thick slice of toasted sourdough with a pat of butter on top, I can't think of anything better.
So good. Yeah.
Anything butter.
So what's been tasty for you?
For me, actually, so you know I'm always, I'm like a non-practicing vegan. Like, I really like eating plant-based, but I'm not.
Yes. Like, you're plant-forward.
I'm strict about it with myself. I'm plant-forward. Thank you. I'm starting a movement. And this week, one of the meal prep things, I was going to make called for ground beef, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever. That's great. But I really, actually really enjoy tofu, and I really like eating plant-based. So I was like, I've heard about this before, like making like fake ground beef out of tofu. And I was like, I don't know, like, is this going to work? It actually was great. And what I made, if I closed my eyes, it tasted like ground beef, and it had the texture of ground beef. Wow. I couldn't believe it. You basically like literally tear apart with your hands the tofu. Mm-hmm. So it's in these like little bits. Yeah. You make whatever blend of spices that makes it all, you know, adds umami to it. Because tofu has no flavor, really. And you bake it, like, really thin layer in the oven. I actually couldn't believe it.
So what did you eat it on or with?
With the cabbage. It was kind of, it was like a Southwest flavored cabbage and ground beef meal. I know. I love cabbage.
I do too. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Yum.
It was really yummy. I'll send you the recipe.
You should send me that, and maybe I'll try to make it with tofu too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really fun to make like ground beef tofu. It didn't take very much time.
I love how experimental you are faster, in the kitchen. Like, you're always just like, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to try to make this. I'm going to go for it.
I never think about it like that, but Thomas is always like, sometimes it's like, you're really trying new things lately. Like, this one didn't really work.
Yeah.
But he says that, yeah.
That it just reminded me, I think I told this story on here before, about when my friend Emily made a chocolate cake with hot chocolate powder.
Sometimes you really can't do a substitution. No, you know what I mean?
It didn't work.
Sometimes it doesn't work. Yeah. her heart was in the right place.
She, you know what? She went for it. Yeah.
Does Emily listen?
No. No. I mean, okay. I think sporadically, but yeah.
Okay. Shout out if you
ever heard. She's got a lot going on. Shout out, Emily. All right, you guys. Well, thank you so much for being here. We are wrapping up this episode, and we are wrapping up this season too. This is season two, season three. We're wrapping up season
three. Well, yes, we're entering a new era of this pandemic, hopefully, where everybody's getting vaccinated. And maybe we'll see everybody when we all have antibodies.
I would love that. Let's have a meetup.
Yeah. Well, I'll go to Magnetic Hill. thank you so much for listening, everybody. We really love chatting with everybody and listening to what you have to say, and really, really, really appreciate the listenership. I speak for both of us when I say, like, part of it is, like, obviously, like, we love, like, learning about this stuff ourselves, like, when we do the research, and, like, some of it is just, like, we just like doing, like, looking this up. And we were doing it anyway before we had a podcast, just, like, reading about this. Yeah. Obviously, you were doing it for your profession. But we really love the part where we get to share it with everybody.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for being a part of that.
Yeah. And in the meantime, while we're in a little, you know, between season break, I mean, number one, rate our podcast.
Collecting EI.
right. Rate our podcast, you know, give it a 5-star rating, leave us a review, you know, a
don't you
rave
want a production
review.
Company to have us for once?
Yeah, we need your reviews for that.
so we can make more of these.
Follow us on social media. Follow our personal social medias. And also, you know, we'll still be on social media. So slide into the DMs. Let us know how you're liking the episodes. Let us know what else you want to hear in season 4. We are totally open to your recommendations. If you have guests that maybe you want us to have on, let us know. We are totally open to all of your suggestions. 'Cause we really, you know, we try to tailor this around, our listeners and what you guys need and what you're interested in hearing about. So, yeah.
And in the meantime, continue checking out Hannah's blogs, especially. I mean, check out all her content, but her blogs are going to keep coming out. They're amazing. Lots of tips and lots of knowledge and lots of recipes there. You know, there's always going to be content, nutrition content available for you there. I do the odd tweet every once in a while about something brain related.
Follow Tarek on Twitter.
Really angry. That's bad claims.
No, you're hilarious on Twitter. You have some really good, solid, funny tweets. Not only on your personal one on the No BS Nutrition Twitter account.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Actually, can I do a little shout out to some people who might be listening? So if you are a graduate student, and I think like there probably are like Masters of Nutrition, Masters of Dietetics students who listen to this, and you're probably interested in science communication if you're listening to this, check out my Twitter sooner or later, because there's, and it, maybe if you're local to Canada, there is going to be a science communication conference that accepts Canadian graduate students, and I'm helping to run the Atlantic component of that this coming year.
Amazing.
Yeah, so if you love nutrition and you want to keep talking about it, you should, and maybe check out some science communication opportunities.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely. So Tarek's Twitter, the link to his Twitter is always in our description of all our episodes. So check that out if you're interested, for sure. Yeah.
And just definitely tag Oprah on Twitter and, you know, ask her to
interview us
financially. us on a Super Soul Sunday. Can you imagine?
I would love that.
I think we would get higher ratings than Meghan and Harry.
100%. Oh, yeah.
I mean, what do they even... No, it was actually really serious that they talked about something really important.
Yeah, it was.
I was going to say, what do they even talk about? No. It was, like, really sad and devastating.
It was. Yeah. Anyways.
On that note, bye!
All right. We will see you guys in season 4. Take care.
Yes, we'll be in LA. Bye, everyone.
Bye.